Evergreen Cemetery. My mother died in 1958, and this was written a few years later, but it has a couple of lines in it that I like very much even now. Evergreen Cemetery. I guess it is evergreen. What's sure if green isn't? Me standing here in death's seated town, in full summer. The dead down there unfreezing comfortably. The cold, miserable rain untouching them. Outnumbering all to hell the last newcomers. One human, two chipmunks, some squirrels. Child me, subtract 30 years, yelling down the rotting mausoleum vent. Hoo-hoo, wake up. The dead inside silent, silent now. So, the swaggers flaunt over graves an appropriate green panache. So the braggarts delve into dumb roots. So the lovers join an unemotional passion as earth shapes and reshapes itself again and again. But the dead are wholehearted about being dead. No half measures, no shilly-shallying. They're committed, dedicated to purposelessness. Jesus Christ. Anyway, but the dead are wholehearted about being dead. No half measures, no shilly-shallying. They're committed, dedicated to purposelessness. And I get a grim glee from all the high-sounding old aspirations and cliches ending in damp ground. Glee close to grief, maybe. A hangman's gladness. If that's being human, it's best done with. But it's too complicated to sum up in telling phrase or easy pessimism, syllogism or denouement. I've seen the same graveyard sunlight at a beach, mottled on a girl's flesh, and grope for it under a blanket. I've seen these trees spilling down mountains that I trudged up sweating, loved for their banner's brightness. Well, I've no business in this damn place, not yet anyway, with the taverns open, though my mother has. Inept Christian that she was, bumbling among the granite colossi, searching for her Redeemer. But I remember her savage gray face before she died in a drug fever, a nurse telling me she'd stuffed her false teeth up her rectum in a pleased, shocked voice, that sharpened, elemental, grinning face with empty jaws, which almost as I watched, bit hard on death. Which reminds me, I'd better hurry and get out of here before the gates close. Likes and opposites. This is almost an imitation of W.H. Auden. Our friends are coming back now. Our enemy is retreating. The last detachment left the village only an hour ago, avoiding dangerous roads, leaving behind piles of equipment and a quota of young uns among the women. Our friends? I wonder if they still are. That friendship had a dubious quality. Incumbent on us both to be friends. They condescending, or being rather hurt. Ourselves ungracious, snappish, always uneasy. Advantageous to both we didn't quarrel openly, or hear what the other said. Our enemies? I wonder if they still are. It's difficult to have either one. If they insist on passing through so swiftly, the land of our slow passage, hastily over the blue roads, bedrooms, and misty pastures, stopping for nothing. There is some apprehension in the village, now our friends are returning. Some keep lookout on the east road, or get buckets of sand in case of fires. The men with wives began to worry, the women scold. It's quiet, very quiet. Party of the first part. The bald man scowled at a 100-watt bulb and addressed himself to the seduction of his hostess, aided by the preoccupation of her husband with the question of whether final opinion is possible. The gray man said, "I am God, and that's final," possibly feeling the effects of his last bottle of beer. I sat in the studio, fascinated by the respiratory processes of the lady opposite, imagining us trapped in an elevator in the United Nations building on Palm Sunday. At 2 o'clock, good was declared positive and evil negative, a sort of alternating current in men, courtesy of God and a man who operated the driving school on Kingsway. At 3, The bald man went to the kitchen for sandwiches and drinks with the hostess. They were gone a long time. At 4, I smoked a cigarette on the porch with the lady, the facilities of the UN being unavailable on Saturdays. At 5, the host said, "This was a damn good talk. I really think we got somewhere tonight." The bald man agreed, but I abstained from voting. An hour later, I sat in the car at Spanish Banks, watching the streaks of dawn and the tide coming, smoking another cigarette and coughing a little. Love poem. Respiratory. Hostess. You want to insert those later? If you have to, eh? Okay. Love poem. She's hurt. Many times before, I was the torturer. No matter how, I was able to swing her world terribly awry, so that the gray cement and the portrait of herself she carried with her with the smile that was necessary for her to smile, and the uninhabited minutes of silence in which she was terrified by excess of nothing, were obliquely twisted to an acute angle by the great roar I made in her body, and my falcon digging its dirty nails into the bearable incomplete hurt and reasonably moderate agony. So that I am to Sad and Gilda Ray become light between her fingers, become the red darkness where flesh touches flesh and rescinds nothing. Now that I cannot hurt, entry denied, a doctor digs with steel in the warm uterus instead, the shapely assignations of flesh cancelled, mud like veritable mud touching her. I would crawl in beside the knife, give the pain myself, since it's necessary. Rescind nothing, brood agony, nor surrogate glove, till the pelvic arch contracts, dampness on lips, breath shallow, and pulse, till steel rusts, and I am the steel. Pain shrieks, and I am the pain. Death comes, and I with him. O woman, even this much of my intent is inextricable. I really screwed that one up. Okay. Now that I cannot hurt, entry denied, a doctor digs with steel in the warm uterus instead. The shapely assignations of flesh cancelled, mud like veritable mud touching her. I would crawl in beside the knife, give the pain myself, since it's necessary. Rescind nothing, brood agony, nor surrogate glove, till the pelvic arch contracts, dampness on lips, breath shallow, and pulse, till steel rusts, and I am the steel. Pain shrieks, and I am the pain. Death comes, and I with him. O woman, even this much of my intent is inextricable. One call cantos. It's not an imitation of Pound, but it is written in a rather archaic language. However, cantos. He cries his sickness. Nostrum specific physic have tempered the malaise somewhat. Methinks the witch would let me live, but I would not. Ague in bones, night risings, pluggy fever, staked out in daisy field to nourish flies, let ants discover, and various beetles gelled. He discerns the cause. Albeit the maid is fair beyond all need, but shrewish, spiteful, deaf to please, shouts of anguish. God will punish her, but not enough. Meanwhile she scourges me, plumps herself in chair, smiles, arranges skirts, claps hands, glitters under lamps, forsooth, while poor moth singes wings, moans, gulps to her giggles. Lover of oddment she once wore, oof, lout and churl, in fief forever to barony of yellow hair. He decides to live. Harky now, the mildewed beldame in High Street hath cured all ill. I shout, I sing, I laugh at the wan, woesome dog's lopped tail that was I. Howl hard to full moons, Morion, lie drunk in ditch, or dream of beldame's daughter, the rich, ripe roan mare, the shining of her. Eli Mandel's Sunday Morning Castle. He never could get that castle right. The walls kept crumbling inward. The donjon keep was salted with spaced bones of old friends, and falling stones made burial impossible. In the scullery, he could hardly get a bite to eat late at night. Salami sandwich, or pickled peasant, because of walls falling. It was decidedly unpleasant. No time for the finer things. Frescoes in the gallery, completing the west wing. Rain on picture windows. As was natural, he blamed the architect. Thumb screwed blood from the man's fingers. Finally thought it best to finish him off, last as first. The noise was alarming the neighborhood. Of course he became slightly mad during wet spring nights on a damp bed with no woman to air the sheets. Made lewd signatures with thumb and fingers. Built cairns of dung in the Sally Gardens. Watered the geraniums with urine. The sort of art one gets when, leaving tradition, black mass is said for all things living. Of course, the castle's gone to rack and ruin, yawns like a skull, but it's all that's left of a dead madness. The stones are all. The body that had no use for a woman somehow cast a net over darkness. Broken walls allow moonlight to enter. Inadvertent animals have taken apartments and spilled shadows. It has to be given meaning. The ruins have none, unless the dead man's madness came out of his mind slowly to unbuild in darkness and began with light. Courtier's soliloquy. I was thinking of Leighton when I wrote this. To join a king's retinue, though the king be a silly fool, such a chance comes once or twice at most to all of us. He prospers greatly, and the people heap honors on his fatuous head. He knows their wishes well, responds with clown's antics, and no bread. Round his head St. Elmo's light flashes brilliance, as on a ship at sea, creating easy loyalties, loud admirers, soiled appetites to ease old hungers. Your Majesty, I cannot stay here. I am unnerved in all this wild acclaim. It comes like a boom of drums, and as time goes, becomes a whisper caught in its own echoes. There is no loneliness like to this of mine. If someone said your name 2,000 years from now, I would love you, but here, love is earned. Say as his consort said once for 2 minutes in early morning, he was human, he was his thoughts. That was fame enough. But I have turned away, and cry as a boy my veritable agony. A man like myself, an old retainer, still young, and having many children, cry pride and a worm's contempt. But for pride's sake, being a stupid man myself, I cannot respect a fool. Misadventure. I remember you, the girl at the party said. Lady, I replied solemnly, we have been here before. Take my arm, and we'll leave these faceless spaces to walk beside the beautiful, beautiful sea. She did, and we did. I remember, she said, there was a girl with you, and a man with you, I retorted quickly. But you insulted me, she said, when your eyes made me a queen, and you failed to worship me. Lady, I told her, I saw the shining chromium cities in your eyes then. Modern subdivisions and 20th century expressways with expensive toll gates. We stopped on a wooded path in Stanley Park, and I fell on my creased knees gallantly. Now I see old kingdoms with tolerant customs, principalities eager for tourists, and curious 20-acre countries that no one notices, except the most perspicacious and unhurried world traveler. Come into them, she said simply. For a week I was happy as a Roman ambassador to Nubia, among all the shiny black maidens, and a king who wished a good report lodged with Caesar. I was happy for a week or two, and then my face soured, my disposition soured, and all the scoundrelly spirochetes made merry at my expense. I looked sourly on all the long, lovely landscapes of women, Bend over, the doctor said. He was an extremely treacherous person. And stab me with a pickle fork, and grin for very joy. So I will, from now on, refrain from all foreign travel. Exchange rates on Canadian money are much too precarious. There's also much to see in my own country. On Canadian Identity, a sentimental monograph for the Daughters of the Empire. Names, if you like. Illisilawat and Medicine Hat. Winnipeg's Prairie Sound. The Whoop and Holler of Calgary. Gunanute, Stammering Outlawry. The small wooded province, Newfoundland. But I live in an apartment in Côte des Neiges. I like the slur and whisper of that, in time and space and a town. History, if you like. Verandry Moses glimpsing something wonderful. Mountains in the sky he thought were legendary. Riel's pitiful insular Métis kingdom. The Socialist Rebellion of 37. Van Horn's railway hooting in the night. Laconic mongoloid loneliness. MacDonald, too. MacDonald, of course. All of it past now. The push and shove of events gone into a copybook country of children, and children themselves receding where I can't follow. For this intuitive shorthand stuff, I managed to join them. Legends? Oh, they're here all right, ready to shine from the TV screen for sweet profit's sake. Do you doubt it? I'll tell you songs to sing and words to take to bed. It'll keep you warm as a wife with a sunburned back. Or, hell, I'll make these slovenly metrics sing in a genuine American imitation of the real thing. Bill O'Cock yet, Wyatt Earp, maybe. But all our heroes stayed dead, God rest their souls, in the paradise of the great North Pole. The high school land, and a dull people, a bridge between old land and new. But the critic judges by other achievements than functional existence, seeks to label, define, exhorts to be like, ends puzzled. For we have bounced no rockets off the moon, swung west to loop the land with gold and steel, or made a bloody pageant of our greatness, or bought men's loyalty by giving or withholding. We have not done any of these great things, troubled, listening to other people's opinions, becoming them, pinned to earth by them, as if we were a focus and burning glass for opinions, as if we were coming to birth somehow, learning to love and to earn and to spend. The worth of life being not necessarily noise, we kept unusual silence and then cried out one word which has never yet been said. The listeners. I might have married her once, but being an overnight guest of hers changed my mind. A big man who looked like a truck driver, getting sober as you can get on beer, suddenly burst out with that. What happened? I said. Her old man was dying of something or other in a room downstairs, without drugs, and screamed most of the time. I could see the line of light under her door, and I kept wanting and then not wanting her between yells. I'd hear the wind blow, the woodwork creak, and listen some more, and think of the girl. Then he'd scream. The waiter came by with beer. Here, I said, and paid him, and grinned in the familiar, friendly roar of the jam-full tavern, and talk boomed in my ears. Go on, I said. After midnight, me lying and listening, hearing people asleep and some not asleep, the sounds an old house makes to itself for company, the nails and boards and bricks holding together such a long time, knowing so many things about people. Then he'd scream, and I'd say to myself, go on and die, go on and die. They must have had the windows wide open, for the sound came in from outside, too. I'd hear the crickets, and then he'd scream. Finally, I heard the girl scramble out of bed. She came rushing into my room in a nightdress and dragged me downstairs and outside, holding my hand so hard she cut through calluses, holding my hand and running like hell, into the fields. Oh, it was good, I thought, it was fine, the silence, and she wanting me and I, but I looked, and it wasn't wanting in her eyes, not wanting at all in her gray eyes, but waiting. My God, what was she waiting for in that wheat field? What did she want to make me do or say or be suddenly there in the moonlight? Well, he said defiantly, I wouldn't. Reassurance seemed in order when I looked at the big, sweating red face and said, Nothing happened. You didn't make love. The old man didn't die. He went away unchanged. He looked at me, and the room grew silent, as if everyone had been listening to his story. At closing time, around the upside-down tables, everyone listened still. Everyone listened. Oh, recruiting sergeants. No, I'll not go with you to fight for human freedom or power steering or the sanctity of marriage in Madrid and Troy and Detroit. Or join the Freedom Riders on their gallant adventure through Alabama and Georgia. I'm much too much a bungling little mechanic, and dare not tinker among the blind engineers of the universe, who work such cruelty and sorrow with levers extending all the way down here. News Complaint Department is a dead switchboard. But to all you with burning barns, lost causes, and dishonored flags, washable skins and souls convulsed with gallantry, I say, press on. Mine is the cynicism no flag shall squander, though the ugly pregnant servant girl in her last miscarried tormented 10 minutes, in the last reel or act or chapter, turns out to have been my sister. No lost cause claimed casually for its glorious dead. No writhing murdered Christ or bloody open-mouthed Caesar talked to death on the living room floor inspires my soul to sob for any leader, least of all yours. Mine is the commonplace acceptance of good or evil, the Persian at Marathon, a Turk at Lepanto, the cynicism of the defeated majority that wickedly survives virtue. Hoc is at Roblin Lake. Waking without moving my head, a gray slot of both light and darkness, the delicate gray augmented by gray the Japanese use on their silk screens, and a portion of the universe of an ash tree. I reach for pen and paper carefully, prop head on hand, and lie so still I cannot move independently of the leaves outside, who tilt and turn from my perspective. Is truth turned over the same? Or has it little thread-like supporting laws, which is almost the trees now, feeling the blind tugging at its wrists, like love, I guess, trying to get free, and sing such a mother song, it cannot go. about 5 minutes? I'm getting through. Well, this might be about 3 minutes then. Well, I better finish the tape. Well, sons and lovers. Having a son like this is having a malicious enemy in the house, waiting to sleep with your wife, aching to administer painful poisons. His inferior status, intellect and physique, is not really an advantage, but a trap in which you may disappear forever. You must win the miserable youth over. It's too late to be Sam Butler, else hate chugs ape-like through muddy stepping-stone jeans into the hissing radioactive future. However, the little bastard doesn't read Toynbee or Bertrand Russell. His god is muscle. How I wish he'd been a daughter with only a castration complex and penis envy to contend with. Oh, praise Sam Butler. Oh, kowtow to old Siggy. He doesn't know I'd gladly give him freedom from me if I could, though there's really no such thing, if the word is understood. Only a dangerous honesty. But damn it, a little bastard doesn't appreciate magnanimity. He's never wrong enough to apologize, though I can from the intact egg of ego. No effort? Then is being wrong important any longer? However, this last and most serious mistake of mine perpetuates me. I'm not entirely convinced I won't be there when he becomes ancestral, and by virtue of stepping-stone genes, we'll tumble headlong into the future, slouch among the nebulae, catnap on a cified variable, each with a ticket of leave that's non-transferable, stamped with my own fierce magnanimity, and his surly, dogged, miserable pride. We lounge, dance, cavort, and leapfrog galaxies, touch the cool, quaquaversal commonalty of light, whose source died long before the first futile egg of the dinosaurs went bad, and hover enough distance out in space from the Andromeda Nebula to wait and watch in the dark for violet light to vault from planet to planet and keep going. Huh? Andromeda. Okay, Andromeda. Okay, I don't want to have to... Before the first futile egg of the dinosaurs went bad, and hover enough distance out in space for the Andromeda Nebula to wait and watch in the dark for violet light to vault from planet to planet and keep going. Andromeda, did I say it? Did I say it right then? Huh. There's about, 70 or 80 seconds one here. Is there time? Okay. The widower. I took what I could recognize of her for my needs. The ice-silver quiet she had, who smiled always if I spoke, and she turned, balancing the smiles look on shoulder fulcrum, the white body that I suppose was like any other one. I took answers from her, and I took fullness. Never went hungry or got out of bed at midnight to burn into oily morning because there was not enough, or tracked a thought in the blue light of an opening between clouds outward. The little I took from her obliquely, a shy mannerism, or directly, the navel's flower was enough and too much, and she kept the rest for herself, as if 30 years was, after all, only a sort of preamble. How's the time? Here's about 30 seconds. Two, three, four, five, six, seven. No. Okay, fine.